Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 798. Wow. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Oh, you know, it's a usual week around the DeFrango household. It is fresh after anniversary weekend, and a little foreshadowing for the end of the show. Got some beer in the fine city of Indianapolis this past weekend. So there will be some Indianapolis themed beers throughout the next couple of months here. And one specific one tonight here that will be in store. So there is that. And we're not here just to talk beer, but there's always some wrestling talk. And there's nothing better to start with these days than the Bloodline. They are really the focus of the WWE's programming, whether it is SmackDown or Raw. And they are chewing up a lot of scenery at the moment.
Yes, yes. And no one is chewing up more scenery than one Mr. Sami Zayn.
Yeah, he continues to be at the forefront of the Bloodline storylines. I really got a hoot out of the fact that that Roman Reigns is so fed up with how Jey Uso is acting that he is ready to make one Samuel Zayn a full ooze and even remove the honorary title.
He's gonna change his name to Sammy Uso. That would be incredible. What can you say? What a segment.
it comes hot on the heels of a loss yet again that involves Sami Zayn and Jay having their issues, and it keeps the brawling brutes within the Bloodline's orbit here.
Yes. They have a tag team championship match on Saturday, but left to their own bickering, Roman Reigns is forced to come in to put the daddy pants on, and Sami Zayn's attempt at extending the olive branch, not accepted by Jey Uso. Jey just goes off on Sami and then says he doesn't give a damn what the tribal chief has to say. Sami again de-escalates the situation as only he can by telling Roman that Jey has been acting the way he has been because he just has not been feeling oozy lately. And he lets it hang out there. And he breaks everybody. just breaking me right now. And, you know, this is now a thing.
Yeah, I mean,
he was able to pull himself together to get back on point as far as the threat of if they don't get on the same page, hey, he's gonna, as we said, he's gonna take the honorary off that shirt. He's gonna rename Sami Zayn Sami Uso, and then finally Paul Heyman was able to just cut a short promo on Logan Paul and literally counted them down to break.
I forgot about that part. That part killed me. The countdown, the exact countdown to break. Yeah, that really was kind of the whipped cream and cherry on top of that segment. Not really necessary, yeah, but yeah, hey, why not?
Yeah, we gotta get this back around to. So the match that's actually happening in a week, yes. Somehow. But no, it's unbelievable. I mean, I don't know how you... I don't know how you keep Sami Zayn from being a giant babyface out of this. I mean, like, something absolutely dastardly would have to happen to keep him a heel. And I don't know if the end game is Sami leaving the Bloodline or Jay leaving the Bloodline. But, again, Sami is just so hot right now. And there's a lot of money. I was bringing something this week that the storyline may have even been over by now, but once it started to click, they decided to run even longer with it. And who knows how long this will run? I mean, obviously we're getting to War Games with this. With all this,
yeah. If there is any doubt that this faction were making it to the War Games, I think that it's been confirmed now. Like that, we're too close out to that pay per view for it not to happen.
Yeah. No. I mean, once again, Sami Zayn would have to screw up something gigantic in order for it. Them to justify the beatdown and throwing him out of the group. I don't foresee that happening still for at least a little while here. If that's what's going to happen, once again, they could justify a Jey Uso turn. Once again, which is what makes this all so intriguing. But no, Sami Zayn is absolutely on fire. It's. He has breathed new life into this whole Bloodline thing. It was running out of steam. You could argue with Roman and the Usos running out of opponents for their titles, but now this element, it has added a lot of drama and humor to everything. You gotta get. I think that once again, people want to cheer Sami Zayn. This Usy thing is good. They gotta put it on a T-shirt.
Oh yeah, it's one of those instant.
It will sell.
Yeah, it's one of those instant. If you're not printing those T-shirts right now, I'm disappointed in you. You know, like. Because people already had signs on Raw that said, I'm not feeling Usy or feeling Usy. It's just like, it's already catching on quite well, thank you very much. And, yeah, you definitely need to run with something like that. In no way. That just feels like you're printing money, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we had to fast forward to Raw, and then make sure after bringing it up once, we get serious Roman. Focusing on the Logan Paul match, I'm just not a fan of Paul hammering in this whole metal screws and Logan Paul's Hank fist thing. That's not how having metal in your body works. It's something so out of the 80s or 90s. It's so cheesy. It feels just so behind the times. Like that's just literally not how it works. You don't if you have a steel plate or screws implanted in your body, you can't hit someone with it, and it makes it. And to make it hurt more, or have more knockout power. That's not how any of that works.
Oh yeah. They don't think things through sometimes.
No. And Paul does get to come up with a lot of his own stuff. That's when you start to realize Paul himself is about a 60-year-old man who has, you know, was a product of the 80s and 90s, and has his elements that have an advantage. As I said, it's a silly thing. I wasn't a big fan of, you know, talking about Logan Paul's knockout power to begin with. It's just like,
oh.
He was in two wrestling matches. He did wrestling moves. He's a perfectly acceptable wrestler. It doesn't have to be about his boxing. And no one believes he's going to win this match anyway.
Oh.
And that's where Roman really went off on Raw. What am I even doing? Why am I pretending this that Logan Paul has a chance, that anybody has a chance? I mean, we'll talk about the mid stuff in a minute, I guess, but that promo Roman cut walking up the ramp was some of his best promo work ever. I mean, he was feeling that.
Roman's been great this for most of this Bloodline thing. Like, and I guess to go back to it for a moment, like, he really had run out of opponents, and this has given him something, you know, to deal with, at least. Logan Paul is an opponent. It's a name. We know that they like to do some silly stuff over in Saudi Arabia, so it kind of fits the bill to do things this way. And, we should be treated to a fairly decent match. I mean, from what we've seen from Logan Paul already, man seems like he has spent time to try and be a good wrestler. And it definitely seems to have paid off.
I'm certainly not expecting a bad match. I mean, he had a very, very good match with The Miz at SummerSlam. And, you know, Roman Reigns is better than The Miz, so I would say. So it should be a very good match. It should be fun. Now, WWE is, I think, having an issue with keeping their heels, and maybe the less not keeping their baby faces, but definitely keeping their heels. Positive reactions to Roman Reigns, Sami Zayn, obviously. How do you not love Sami Zayn? We'll talk about Seth Rollins in a bit. It's becoming challenging for them. to keep their heel seals.
It's definitely been a problem for a while now. Because I feel like we talked about this even under Vince, you know? And Triple H is kind of even better with the cool heel kind of situation. And, too much coolness for just about all these guys. And it's hard to turn against them when they're cutting all... it's one of those that it's a product of their own situation. Like, Seth Rollins, I guess, is a little more unique in and of the fact that he's not winning as much as Roman Reigns. You know, Roman Reigns, right. What? We've had 2+ years now of Roman Reigns as champion. So, you know, that's kind of wild. You know, at some point, people do recognize how great you are. You know, if you've been the champion for that long, like, that's... I know that they try to keep the championship on someone like a minimum of like 3 to 4 months. Jumping from that time frame to 2 years is a chasm, it feels like. You know, like, they don't go with people as champion for that long of a time period. Like, I don't feel like a year gets broached as much, you know? Like, I always feel like if it's a little bit longer of a title reign, it's more in that 6 to 9 month range and not necessarily in that 9 to 12 month if we're going, you know, just by kind of quarterly. And, Roman Reigns has been champion for more than 2 years, and that is It's wild, and it's hard to, yeah, again, like, he's been, when you're a main focus, and you're there all the time, and the guy has been, he's been delivering with his segments, and it's kind of funny, I guess, neither him nor Seth Rollins are really trying to be babyfaces. But the character, yeah, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just more the crowds these days. Or, I do think a large part of it is these guys are just really good at what they're doing. And at some point, you just have to like it. And because Seth Rollins, I mean, that man has been cutting crazy fun promos for a long time now. In the garish suits, I feel like it goes from working against you at some point to working for you. I can't tell you where that dividing line is necessarily, but I feel like it's there. And, yeah, going against Matt Riddle kind of helps a little bit too, since he can be a little divisive with the crowd.
Yeah, no, no. Riddle has gone completely back to being obnoxious without the assistance of Randy Orton. Yeah. So, yeah, and then this week, Seth just wrestling a heel and winning clean and seemingly just welcoming the sing along with his entrance music and just essentially just being allowed to be a babyface. No mention of an incoming title match with Mustafa Ali. They were completely removed from each other this week. Well, it's feels like we are going to start moving towards a Seth Rollins babyface turn. And it one thing was interesting today is they are marking November 2022 as the 10th anniversary of Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns coming in together. Of course, also with Dean Ambrose, but. Technically, he's not a part of the anniversary because he left 3 years ago. It's not they never see the Shield. They're not saying that. So, could a possibility be that heading into Survivor Series, Roman doesn't go into War Games? He leaves his other four to go into War Games while he defends his Universal Heavyweight Championship against Seth Rollins?
It's one of the few opponents that he has left. You know,
He did the match at Royal Rumble, and it's the only match that Roman Reigns lost by disqualification in his entire run.
It's impossible to not do a match amongst the main eventers at this point. But, they have really done... That's one of the few feuds that they have, for the most part, kept separate. Because they did... what'd you say? It was the Rumble that they had the match? But it was really it felt like a short hype to that, for the most part, from if memory is serving. And,
They didn't really do a big hype job for that. It felt very thrown together. It was a weird heel versus heel match. They didn't want to beat Seth that night, so they went with a disqualification finish, which is the only disqualification finish of this entire Roman Reigns run. So it really didn't fit what they've been doing with Roman Reigns just beating everybody. And it was a weird deal. But if they can circle back around to it and bring up that. Seth's the only guy Roman hasn't actually pinned in the middle of the ring during this run that he's faced. You could get some mileage out of that if that's the direction they're going in. I mean, people have been bringing that up, and then now them officially declaring this Reigns and Rollins month, it appears that War Games is still supposed to be 4-on-4. Even though there's five members of the Bloodline, so this removes Roman Reigns from that equation.
No.
While still putting him on the show and putting a title match on the show.
Yeah.
don't say it. The whole weird thing of having Seth just you know, out of nowhere, wrestling a heel on Raw, getting the win clean, you know, doing all of his big spots, which he always does. That's the biggest knock on Seth Rollins as a heel, is that he still wrestles like a babyface, basically, with all of his high spots.
Yeah, that's a valid argument that I'm really not going to put up too much resistance against.
Yeah, so what? In that situation against Austin Theory, he got to do all his he got to get all his crap, get all his shit in, and the crowd went crazy for it, and it was the desired reaction.
Yeah, I mean, Austin Theory is definitely getting his fair share of boos, whether from I just don't want to see this man anymore, or more actual heel heat. So yeah, you don't have Seth Rollins go against that man specifically if you're not intending for a more positive reaction. And like you said, clean win really helps put a nail in that coffin too. So yeah, it's a real possibility, because I guess I'm trying to think if that would be a feud that they would push out until WrestleMania, though. Like, that's the only question to me that's hanging out there for that feud.
I don't see Seth being the guy to beat Roman. That's the only thing with that. I don't know if they're still holding out hope for The Rock to show up or not. They also got Cody in the waiting in the wings.
Oh.
I do want to see somebody new to the picture be the one to beat Roman Reigns, or somebody. Maybe it could be Sami Zayn. Maybe it could even be Kevin Owens. But, and Seth never really got into main event WrestleMania, because that one time he won a world championship. Two times he won a world championship at WrestleMania. One of them, of course, was the Money in the Bank cash, and the other was when he beat Brock in the opening match.
Oh.
At WrestleMania 35. So, yeah, Rollins has never actually gotten to main event WrestleMania officially. So... But I don't know. I'm still not feeling Rollins for that role. Although it would be weird if Seth is Rollins a full baby face by the time Cody gets back.
Yeah, that makes for some odd interactions.
Yeah, you almost have to get them on different shows just to avoid it. Or you probably should do that, actually. If we are going with a full Seth Rollins face run.
Yeah, and I mean, it's Monday Night Rollins, so it would make sense in a lot of ways to keep Cody on SmackDown, anywho. But the main problem still with that that situation is going to be that they're both going to be kind of in the championship hunt. And if... Well, oh no, I guess if Seth continues to be the U.S. champ and not the main champ, we don't have anything to worry about show swap-wise. Yeah, it'll be, yeah, Seth would be a fun one, to see go against Roman. And yeah, I guess you're right. I don't necessarily see him being the one who takes down Roman. So, I'm trying to think now what else was going on here in the world of WWE here. Oh, you know what? Since we talked something about them last week, there were the one topic that I wanted to bring up and knew it wasn't opening the show worthy. Emma makes her somewhat surprised return to SmackDown this week and is the mystery opponent for one Ronda Rousey. On the level of 0 to 10, what was your level of surprise that this this old face popped up on your TV?
Well, 0, because the news broke earlier in the day.
Oh, okay. Well, fair enough. I guess I did not see that news before I watched SmackDown on Sunday.
Yeah, no, you're out living your life. nothing wrong with that. But no, the news did unfortunately break. What an interesting reaction. Never a favorite of mine. It always felt like, you know, the other ladies. I know, she was one of the first ladies in NXT and one of the first call ups after Paige. But of course, the Horsewomen and a few others would surpass her pretty quickly. So she was never a heavily featured person.
Hey,
you know, she was never somebody who I got super excited about seeing. You know, the quality of women's wrestling increased dramatically, and I don't want to say she couldn't keep up. But she was a leveler to below it. So maybe I'm saying she could keep up with it. But again, body to have on the roster, because within the roster that needs bodies. You know, good for her for getting her way back. The match with Ronda was not what I would call good. definitely some clunkiness. I don't know how much I would blame on her, but yeah, no. I mean, this Ronda run not exactly producing too many bangers, as Sheamus and the Brawling Brutes would say. It's been rough, and
it's
dating back to Ronda's first run that was you know, undeniably good. When she was in moments where she was having matches on TV that she didn't have a lot of time to prepare for, those matches were clunky. And when Ronda put in a situation where her match isn't something that's a big pay-per-view match that's, you know, her and her opponent have weeks to prepare for, not good. Although, I guess, I don't know what her and Liv Morgan's excuse was at Extreme Rules. Although they had a couple of prop-related incidents, like the chair that didn't go right, and, you know, not necessarily anybody's fault. But,
yeah.
Yeah, no. That's just a lot of words to say. No, I mean, Ronda's persona-wise, she's getting some of it back, but in the ring, it's still rough.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that her matches have almost regressed in quality.
Yeah, it's again, a lot of people have questioned whether she really, really wanted to do this, and people have questioned this. She was four years ago now, you know. When she was last around, when she had that year, it's, you know, she has something to prove. She really wanted to be there. It was, you know, it was a lifelong dream type of thing. It was her bucket list thing. But now we are definitely looking at a wife, a mother, and someone who, maybe most importantly, already has more than enough money than she'll ever need.
Yeah, motivation is a hard thing to replicate. That is for sure. And that might be one of the problems. First run, she had something to prove. Maybe there was a little more oomph into things. But maybe it's not quite there. I will say one thing that I, and I guess this is more of a presentation thing here, because you already said that her character, her persona is a little more on track. I do like the pairing of her and Shayna Baszler. You know, like, it kind of made sense to go that route. I wouldn't mind to maybe help avoid these situations. Have a heavy in there for Ronda Rousey. Like, I think that would work out nicely to tell her to have to get through, you know, her opponents to have to get through someone before they get to her.
Yeah, no, I think that could certainly work.
So, but yeah, that I guess it indirectly solves the in-ring problem. It does not directly solve the problem. So, we'll see. We'll see what happens with that one. It is kind of interesting with the other women's championship here. I believe in Saudi Arabia we're getting Bayley versus Bianca, and why is the stipulation of the match eluding me currently? Because it isn't a last woman standing match,
last
is
woman
it?
Standing.
Oh, it is last woman standing.
It is last woman standing. Yes.
Well, yeah. It's an interesting choice of matches, I suppose, and I don't know if this goes hand in hand or not, but. do you have to have Bayley win after her stablemates lost this past Monday to?
No. You're, I'm sure you're not aware of this, but earlier today it was made official. The tag team title rematch will also be taking place at Crown Jewel. So it doesn't necessarily think they might be getting them back. We shall see about that. But no, I can see Bayley win. I could go either way. I could see Bayley taking the women's championship. It's not out of the realm of possibility. It is weird that, you know, Bayley gets to pin Bianca in the non-title situation, but then when the title's on the line, Bianca is left in these matches that do not end by pinfall.
Oh. Yeah, that is a little bit of a snafu in this feud, at least from Bianca's end, for sure.
Yeah, and then even with that said, another loss from Bayley. I don't think you can really. I mean, they've done it, I guess, in the past, but it's always stupid. You know. If you lost twice like that, I think you need to go back to the end of the line for a while.
And I think that's my big hold up with this whole thing. I'm like, damage control, I guess if they win the tag championships back, it's not as bad because then you can at least sell something for them as far as them being a good unit. With them not having the championships, it, like, that's where I started to feel like, I'm like, man, Bayley really needs to win this one now. Like, damage control just seems damaged at that point.
Yeah, I'm not as down on it. I mean, because really, I think Asuka and Alexa did need to win that match. I mean, they, more than Bianca, have gotten the crap kicked out of them. They were injured in storyline. They never get to beat Damage Control themselves. So, you know, once again, it provided a good moment, a good reaction, good match.
Yeah.
Although some of the clips going around really highlighting that maybe some tempers flared during the course of the matchup, in particular involving Alexa Bliss and Io Sky. But overall, you know, a good match. A strong match. Everyone had a good.
I need to see those clips. I suppose I'll need to look those up. I guess I don't remember anything sticking out to me during the match itself. So that's why I'm mentioning it that way. Because was it part of the on-air product?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, the videos, scroll down my Twitter, you'll find it.
Oh, okay.
Of the moment of the match, it looked like Alexa was genuinely getting mad at how hard Io was kicking her. And fired back some receipts.
Man. I will take some time to check that out. But yeah, that's pretty funny. But I guess, yeah, I suppose it is what it is when that situation pops up. You know, either people come to an understanding or they don't. You know, I feel like Brock and Braun came to an understanding after their little situation a few years back.
I'm pretty sure Braun came to the understanding. And Brock to this day still does not like to wrestle Braun Strowman. Because they should have had a much bigger run than they did, but, you know, Braun accidentally tagged Brock twice. And Brock then tagged him back on purpose twice.
Yep.
No. But once again, though, it was a good match, and they played that as a big moment. Even busting out the pyro. It's again, if it's only a 5-day reign, it's only a 5-day reign. I mean, I guess it's fine. Each side still needs to add at least one more member to get to War Games. We haven't seen Candice LeRae since her beating last week. It looks like we're maybe setting up to Nikki Cross, her alleged beating last week. I think that's an important distinction. Maybe setting up for Nikki Cross to pick a side, which was an interesting part of this whole thing, and Damage Control getting involved in the match with Bianca and Nikki, you know, being Nikki, you know, starting to fight Damage Control before, yeah. But Bayley trying to talk Nikki onto her side in a backstage segment. There's definitely some chips to play here. Possibility of Becky Lynch returning, but I'm not sure on that one. It does feel like they're gonna either they have to or they will hold Becky out longer.
Yeah, that's one that. Cause is there some type of surprise appearance happening in? Oh, that's what I was thinking. AJ Styles said that he had an equalizer in mind for Rhea Ripley. And it had kind of crossed my mind wondering if the WWE had someone in mind to help out especially after those proceedings. And I suppose my mind went to Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch first on the list there, but I'm not sure that either of them fits in with the club.
Yeah, no, I don't know if they'll find that person and bring them Saudi. I could see this being the match that, you know, that the Judgment Day wins again before we get to that. I don't remember. Did I mention Raquel as a possibility?
I'm not. I don't think that that we had talked about her being a possibility.
Just another woman with some size and power. So you could certainly make that work if you needed to. Because once again, there's just not a lot. And once again, it doesn't feel like a big enough spot to. Return Charlotte Flair in, for example.
No.
And, you know, once again, add Raquel to the names I mentioned last week, because I don't think this person's going to beat Rhea. Yeah. I don't know. If anything, it feels like we're probably going to get a big Rhea push. Heading into the new year, and you know, especially if Bianca is still champion, you know, it was a match that was supposed to happen over the summer, but didn't. And they've just kind of, they've really made Rhea a physical threat to grown men. So, you know, once again, for, you know, once Rhea's back, you know, wrestling women again, and, you know, there's certainly a sense of danger to Rhea Ripley matches that wasn't there before. Rhea's always had size, she's always had power, she's always, you know, had an intimidating look, but what they've done with her the last month or so, especially that's just the last month or so in the Judgment Day, you know, she's a physical threat on another level, so yeah, to go there with, you know, a women's championship challenge is definitely something that they should do.
Yeah, I mean, when you start calling her the X Factor, and she does seem to somehow figure into all of her team's wins one way or the other, you know, and she slams Luke Gallows last week, or was that 2 weeks ago? Not really.
That was last week.
Okay. And then this week she's telling AJ and Carl Anderson to come at her in the ring, just showing no back down whatsoever. You know, it's really something else. I mean, it does help that they are not two of the bigger guys on the roster, but still, it's something. You know, like to really show Rhea ready to mix it up with those two guys it's really something else. And yeah, like other than Charlotte Flair, there's not really the physical presence on pretty much any of the shows that Rhea Ripley is to Bianca Belair. You know, and the interesting point is the one that you bring up. We have seen Rhea Ripley wrestle very little while being very involved in the product.
Yeah, no. I mean, her match with Roxanne Perez on NXT is the only official match she's had since June, because she got hurt in the match. She you know, earned her number one contendership, which she was supposed to face, you know, Bianca at Money in the Bank, which, once again, one of those, maybe one of those injuries that ended up a blessing in disguise, because now you can really do that match as something, as a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, Rhea hadn't really recovered from that whole call-up lost to Charlotte Flair shenanigans. She's had some moments in between then and now, but for the most part, she's never really kind of regained that ass-kicking status that she had in NXT. So this is really the first time that I feel like she's kind of gotten back to that vibe.
Oh, yeah. She absolutely has. Yes. This whole Judgment Day thing has had its pluses and minuses from the beginning. But the new life it did breathe into Rhea is definitely one of the positives.
Well, and people don't like them. It's kind of weird, the setup that they have going on still, because it still feels like they have one guy that's just there to take beatings. Or look like a chump, so I'm not quite sure what Dominic Mysterio really does for you, other than get you booze, I suppose. Yeah. Unique group that they got going on there. They do seem to be getting some forward momentum, though, with everything that's been going on. And they do seem to keep on getting the upper hand in the club in these matchups. So that is helping them out, too. I'm trying to think if there's anything else was really big this week on the programming that I can think about without looking at a write-up. And I don't think that that's possible. Because this was a pretty quiet week, all things considered.
I guess the next thing we could talk about is The Miz. And Johnny Gargano's Byron Sachs' investigative interview with Johnny Gargano, complete with reenactments.
Yeah, I think that's a good one to talk about, just because I feel like all of us have been asking, where are these segments that they're doing in NXT? Why haven't they made their way to Raw? This was one of those segments in my book. It was quite amusing to have a 60-minute style interview going on with Johnny Gargano and Byron Saxton. I am so glad that Byron Saxton is away from Corey Graves. He is 100% more entertaining now. As much as I liked the segment, it didn't seem like a natural conclusion to what was going on last week.
It's not necessary. I don't think it's necessarily a conclusion. I think that there's still more layers to peel from this onion. Miz apparently paying Dexter Lumis to stalk him, and even cost him the U.S. Championship, which once again, Gargano had his explanation for it, but it still felt kind of flimsy. Why would he do that? Why would he do that? And then you have the thing that, yes, at some point it became real because Miz stopped paying Dexter. It's a fun twist. I mean, it doesn't necessarily all make sense, and maybe it's not supposed to, because there's still more to learn about all of this. Dexter's, of course, still going after Miz, still costing him matches. It's still a lot of fun. It's, once again, it doesn't all maybe necessarily all need to make sense, considering that it's place on the card.
Man, yeah, The Miz. That man can move up and down the card like nobody's business. Although, I mean, they are certainly getting their fair share of airtime. And, yeah, I mean, The Miz even got to offer the tribal chief a little bit of advice this week. It was not taken, but he goes from working the bloodline to working.
It was kind of a weird thing, because you don't typically see Roman Reigns in any way interacting with the people he's not currently feuding with, and you don't see him interacting with other characters or even in anything involved in anything goofy outside of Sami Zayn's antics. So it was a fun deal. Of course, it ended with Roman Reigns Superman punching Miz, and Miz set you up once again. Always ending up in a trainer's room with icing something down. Miz's story wove through the night with his match with Ali and losing because of Dexter again, and then Gargano's reveal, and also credit to Corey Graves, one of his best, heel rants he's ever gone on as an announcer after it was over. It was definitely very Bobby Heenan, very Jesse Ventura. It felt earnest from him. It's a lot of times he doesn't necessarily from Graves.
Oh.
Yeah. Because Graves has been, the voice of reason of this whole thing the whole time, and about how it was like, why doesn't anybody care? Why isn't anybody helping the Miz?
Well, and then the funny thing, and I mean, I guess that was part of the interview in some ways that I feel like they almost didn't highlight enough in some ways for... I mean, I did kind of laugh when Gargano was like, did you see what happened here? The Miz practically walked away with Dexter Lumis. And, you might be able to do that in pretty much any dragging away, since you need some, need some help. It's kind of hard to carry that much dead weight a long distance. But yeah, that was kind of amusing. But statements like that from Graves could also be the Miz's undoing if they decide to go that route. And it would seem like there's going to be some proof to this situation. I don't know how much proof, because that was almost the strange thing about Gargano not having all the information. It's one of those ones where I'm like, I almost expected more of a slam dunk case from Mr. Wrestling that we did not completely get. A lot of guesswork thrown in there.
I don't think we were supposed to. I think that there are supposed to be still some questions. Miz has his opening to say, biased journalism, slanted journalism, threat to sue people, whatever, and give his side of the story, it's a fun underneath storyline. So, it's still making me chuckle.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Like I said, I'm all for the creative interviews and creative use of screen time, and and that 60 minute style interview really helped fill that void this week. Is Bray Wyatt still continuing to be something of a hard to talk about factor here? Who continues the main event TV shows? Or Or do you think Captain Howdy is
a little bit of patience? I'm starting to lose a little bit of patience. Yeah, it's all that spooky stuff and, you know, high concept stuff that's, you know, once again, Triple H mentioned that, you know, something along the lines of, you know, Bray's an incredibly smart guy, but he needs to be reeled in sometimes, he needs an editor, and this does not feel like, this feels like Bray being allowed to do, to be completely unedited, and bring in all these different characters. It's pretty obviously that Uncle Howdy was Bray in a mask, so, again, are we getting, like, Bray Wyatt, instead of having two personalities, having, like, six? I don't know, and once again, how does that fit into a wrestling show where the goal should still be to go to a wrestling match of some sort?
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to go, hey, we shouldn't really have this guy in a title match. When he's six different personalities, it makes it hard to feud with someone. Because to me, that was always one of those things that even when he was the host of the Funhouse, it always felt like the babyface was picking on someone. Just because he kind of did a good job of being meek-mannered and everything with that character. It almost seems like they're going to be able to do the same thing with, you know, like, he's saying that it's a new character, and I just feel like it's going to be the same character with a little bit of a refinish on it.
Yeah, no, and that Uncle Howdy mask, suitably creepy, I'll give it that, but I don't think you can wrestle on that. So, once again, what is the end game?
Oh. Got no idea.
Yeah, I think that they really need to ask that question. Because once again, it's November of 2022 now. Bray Wyatt hasn't had a match since April of 2021. Where is this all leading?
Got no idea on this end. No idea. And it doesn't... And it still doesn't, well, and it doesn't even seem like we're pointing anywhere towards a match, you know what I mean? We're 3 weeks in now, and it's just is what it is right now. Like, it's this own weird independent segment that seemingly has nothing to do with the rest of the show.
Sure, it was just Bray under the Uncle Howdy mask. Maybe it was Bo Dallas. You know,
oh.
Maybe then you can get something there if the real Bray is going to be a babyface and he's fighting all these demons. Yeah, maybe you can get something out of that. But if it's all that Bray is just all these different characters himself and he's still essentially a heel, It's once again, as you said, it's the same stuff he was doing, and it doesn't seem to really lead anywhere. I was giving them the rope. I was being patient, but
running out of patience already.
Yeah, it's starting to get on my nerves already. Yes.
I guess one thing that. I did watch today, and I will see if it's still testing your nerves or not, the JBL-Baron Corbin pairing.
Well, at least there's two people who just want to be heels. Because there's nothing cool about the two of them.
No. JBL is definitely doing his best to try and heal it up, and the only thing that I was confused by is I suppose I expected some type of wardrobe overhaul for one Mr. Corbin if he was going to be pairing himself with JBL. I mean, JBL is wearing pajama bottoms at this point, but that's okay. He's old. Baron Corbin, on the other hand, the whole tiger outfit, not feeling it, man. Does not feel like it meshes with JBL calling him a wrestling god.
Yeah, no, it's, once again, Baron Corbin's presentation is so all over the place. Is he still rich? I guess he's still rich, but he's not happy anymore. He's barren. He's dressing like a waiter at a Hawaiian resort. You know, wrestling, once again, he's never figured out a good gear for himself. At a certain point, I don't know what insecurities the man has about his body, but he might have to get over them. Or people in charge have to get over them, because, yeah, there have been characters who dressed, you know, whose gimmick was they dressed in street clothes for during their matches for their gimmick. But maybe not to the length that Corbin does. And so again, it's, you know, he wears these outfits. He's not going to win any land speed records to begin with out there, but it slows him down. Still even more.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah. The they're definitely trying to be heels thing is the best thing you can say, and then it kind of goes all downhill after that. I suppose anything else that, caught your attention this week that is worth talking about before wrapping this puppy on up here?
I think we can wrap this puppy on up. Educate us about the world of Indiana beer, please.
The first brewery that we went to, we hit 4 and 3 breweries. This four on Friday and then another 3 on Saturday. The first one we hit bright and early at 11 a.m. on Friday. They had just opened and we had already walked some ridiculous mileage, like 6 miles. So we decided to have some beverages. I cannot pass up pumpkin beers this time of the year. This one is called Slasher 3 from Scarlet Lane Brewing. It is the head brewer is a woman, which certainly is within the minority of most breweries. And this is one excellent, excellent pumpkin beer. Much like the beer that I talked about last week, the New Trail Brewing, the Double Zombie that had the maple syrup for sweetener, this one is an interesting pumpkin beer in and of the fact that, A, it's pumpkin seed and not pumpkin itself. So that definitely brings a little different nuttiness to the proceedings there. And they use lactose, caramel and cinnamon in this one. And similar to the maple syrup, the caramel brings a different sweetness to a beer. The lactose kind of helps give it a little different mouthfeel and also some sweetness in there. And I'm wondering if the double sweet is from the seed instead of the pumpkin itself, which usually is a tad sweet itself. So you don't really need to double down on sweetness for pumpkin beers too much. But yeah, this one is very good. I know that they are not serving it anymore. It is a mere 4% alcohol, So it is an extremely drinkable beer, and I have been enjoying it quite a bit. I am very happy to have bought a 4-pack of it. And I don't know if one will make it to next year, but yeah, I am definitely knocking a few. Oh, yeah, I'm going to definitely give one to my pumpkin beer-loving brother, older brother here. So yeah, there's that. If you happen to find yourself in Indianapolis, Scarlet Lane Brewing, the Slasher was not the only good beer that I saw there, that I had there. So go ahead and give them a visit should you find yourself there. So that's the Belltime Beer Suggestion from Matt DeFrango 11. He is at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any number of locations, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or Google. Have a good night, grandkids.
Later.